I'm a GIS analyst for an organization called the Children's and Rhinelands Health Initiative. We are a research, education, and outreach group. We're actually based now at Rice University in Houston. We've been based at the University of Michigan and Duke University. So that's the reason why this particular project is about specifically Durham County in North Carolina, even though it's on a Rice PowerPoint template. So this project is about developing a predictive risk model for type 2 diabetes, and I have no relationships to disclose. So the purpose of this project has been going on for about 5 years now. This project came out of a Together on Diabetes grant initiative by the Bristol Myers Squibb Foundation, and also a healthcare innovations grant from CMS. And really the purpose of this project was to improve outcomes around type 2 diabetes. We started in Durham County, North Carolina, which is where Duke University is located, and I'll also mention we expanded later into three other southeastern counties. So we know that there are disparities around diabetes outcomes due to race, age, gender, etc. So our purpose was to use electronic medical records to determine the feasibility of using EHRs to plan and implement diabetes-related interventions throughout the county. So we started in Durham County, and then this is Durham County, was where we started the Durham Diabetes Coalition. And then we later expanded to include three other southeastern counties in the U.S., and so we expanded to an organization called the Southeastern Diabetes Initiative. This initiative is now ended. The Durham Diabetes Coalition is continuing through June of next year, so we're continuing the work in Durham County. However, the work in these other three counties has ended, but we have some good results from them. So Cabarrus County, North Carolina is just north of Charlotte, North Carolina. It's where a lot of NASCAR events take place. It's a relatively socioeconomically depressed county in North Carolina. Our next county is Quitman County, Mississippi, which is in the delta of Mississippi, in the northern part of the state, and it's almost 100% African-American, low socioeconomic attributes there. And then our last county was Mingo County, West Virginia, which is right on the border of Kentucky with West Virginia and the Appalachian Mountains. So racially and ethnically opposite of Quitman County, mostly white, but again, economically depressed area. And so we were interested in looking at these four areas, comparing diabetes outcomes and seeing if we could develop a risk algorithm to predict diabetes risk, and then see if that algorithm was generalizable across the four counties, even though they're racially and ethnically diverse. So we developed this algorithm I'm going to talk about, specifically for Durham County. We then expanded it to include data from Cabarrus County, and so the Cabarrus County Public Health Department has been using this algorithm in their work. Unfortunately, before the end of the project, we were not able to expand the algorithm to Quitman and Mingo counties, but I shouldn't say that. They actually used a kind of simplified version of this algorithm I'm going to talk about in Mingo and Quitman counties to risk stratify their patients, but it does not include everything I'm going to talk about today. So the idea here is that we're going to use EHR data and get these kind of monthly data extracts from the Duke EHR warehouse. And one of the limitations of this study is that we know in Durham County that we're kind of in a unique situation, because in Durham County, North Carolina, Duke University is the medical provider. And so the EHR at Duke University contains data on upwards of 95% of the population in Durham County, which is a unique situation. You know, that's not going to happen in most places in the U.S. where you have almost the entire population contained in one EHR system, right? There's often competing EHRs, and a patient can be seen in multiple EHRs. So we know we're in a unique situation, but that unique situation provided us the opportunity to really see what we could do with this data. So the idea here is that we get a monthly data extract from the EHR at Duke University. We run this risk algorithm that we've developed, and the color here of these dots, these patients filtering through, is actually the neighborhood in which each patient lives. So we're a spatial shop, a GIS shop, so we do everything spatially, and so the idea here is that Well, if a patient is missing data, first of all, they get recycled back through and try to collect all the data we need for the risk algorithm. But then we're also stratifying these patients not just on their risk, but also on their neighborhoods. So, for example, if there are several patients that live in the blue neighborhood that are all hitting on the high intensity spectrum, we know we may need a high level intervention in that particular neighborhood. So, what we used this algorithm for was to risk stratify patients. It wasn't, the purpose was not to give an absolute score of risk, but rather a relative ranking, so that we had basically three classes, high, moderate, and low risk. And when I say risk, actually the title of this presentation is a little bit misleading. We weren't predicting their risk of getting type 2 diabetes. Rather, we were taking patients who already had type 2 diabetes and calculating their risk of developing a serious health complication due to their diabetes. So when I say serious health complication, I'm talking about things like a cardiovascular event, you know, an MI, a stroke, et cetera, or other diabetes-specific related things like amputation, renal failure, kidney disease, et cetera, or death as the worst outcome, right? So along this intervention spectrum, we have patients who were at very high risk of developing one of these serious complications. We have patients who are moderately at risk and the patients who still have diabetes, and so we don't want to discredit them because they still do have diabetes, but they're at a lower risk of developing one of these complications. So because of limited resources and limited funds, we had to focus more on the high-risk patients. So we developed a multidisciplinary home care team, and the patients that fell in the high-risk category actually received in-home care from nurse practitioners, education around how to eat, what to buy, how to take medications, etc. The moderate risk patients received a series of telephonic modules where people would call them and talk to them, but there were no in-home visits. And then the lower intervention spectrum, we focused more on neighborhood level interventions. We would go in the neighborhood and show bus advertisements or commercials or other educational materials. We'd offer exercise classes to the community. We weren't targeting specific individuals in that lower risk category. We also mobilized these interventions in three pilot neighborhoods to begin with. I'm not sure if anyone in this room is familiar with Durham County, but our three pilot neighborhoods were Walltown, so the historically black neighborhood, an area in South Durham, which is centered around a church, which we have a strong community basis for in North Carolina. If you really want to affect change on a community level, you need to go to the churches. And then finally in East Durham, which is, again, a historically black minority, low socioeconomic neighborhood. So these are the various things we included in our clinical risk algorithm, the various factors. So patient demographics, sex, age, et cetera, insurance status, as well as clinical diagnoses, if the patient has ever had a stroke or heart failure, et cetera. We included labs as well, A1C, hemoglobin, et cetera, medications, and then also hospital utilization. So these are the clinical factors that went into our algorithm to predict this risk of developing a serious outcome. And the modeling style that we use is called a transition model, where we're transitioning between disease states in a patient. So if a patient in year T, did they have this outcome? And we looked at their data in T minus one to predict what caused that outcome, right? So this was kind of our first run at it, and we had a whole clinical team on this project. So we asked the clinical team, what are we missing from this model? What things are really important to your patients or to the welfare of your practice that we're not including in this model or that we're missing? And the things that they mentioned were things that we can't really get at in a traditional EHR. There are things like social support, neighborhood factors, presence and absence of healthy eating options, things that we weren't going to get out of the Duke EHR. And but luckily for us, we're a spatial shop, so we were able to kind of incorporate neighborhood risk into our second run of this algorithm. So that's what we did. And so this next slide is about incorporating social risk into our model. So we incorporated six factors of social risk. So the first, this is Durham County, by the way. This is the shape of Durham County, North Carolina. Duke University is right about here. So this first panel is just the percent of patients who did have a serious outcome due to their diabetes in year T-minus one. So then we included these six measures of social risk. So the second slide, second panel here, B, is racial isolation of blacks, and that's kind of a it's based on census data, but it's a measure of racial isolation or segregation. So if a particular neighborhood is particularly surrounded by a black community, blacks are racially isolated in that community, that has socioeconomic implications to that neighborhood. The slide panel C here is neighborhood deprivation, and neighborhood deprivation is also based on census data, but it's an index that looks at things like unemployment, poverty, education, income, etc., all put into one index. Our slide D here is the percent of renter-occupied housing, which is, again, a census variable. We use percent renter-occupied housing to kind of proxy for neighborhood stability, because it's been shown that renter versus owner occupancy or tenure is an important measure of neighborhood stability. On the bottom here, we have the ratio of fast food to grocery stores. So we're getting at healthy eating options there. So how many fast food restaurants versus how many grocery stores in a given area in the county. Then we have percent of patients who use the emergency department. This was our proxy for health literacy. Health literacy is something that came up a lot with our clinical team. They wanted some measure of health literacy, which is really hard to get at without some kind of survey. But we used percent emergency department visits to proxy health literacy because it's been shown in literature that patients with higher health literacy will use a primary care provider rather than the ED. And then finally, we incorporated a measure of proximity, residential proximity to the nearest park or green space, which is a measure of the built environment and maybe exercise opportunities and also green space. So we incorporated these factors into our models. We actually ran six models. So the first model, so if you see the labels here, might be hard to see, but they say like model 1A versus 1B, and then model 2A versus 2B. So what model 1 is just the serious outcome by itself with no clinical or neighborhood factors. Model 2 is adding in demographics into the model. And then model 3 is adding in clinical factors like diagnoses, insurance, etc. And then the distinction between A and B is that A includes just clinical level data and B includes those neighborhood factors that we were talking about. So what's going on in this slide here is that we're showing how patients were reclassified up or downwards in the relative risk ranking when we incorporated these social neighborhood factors into the model. So what we see on this top row here in red are patients with diabetes who, when we incorporated the social risk into the model, correctly went upwards in our risk category. And so the patients that are correctly going upwards in our risk category are based here in central Durham. We see a strong pattern here in central Durham, and we know from previous research and experience that that area is high minority, high poverty, et cetera. So we were not surprised by that result. And then the bottom panels here are patients with diabetes, but whose diabetes is maybe not as serious, who would fall into a low-risk category. So we incorporated social risk into the model. These are patients with diabetes, but who were correctly reclassified downward in risk when we incorporated social neighborhood risk into the models. And so these patients are, you know, it's the inverse, basically. These patients live on the outskirts in the predominantly white, high-income neighborhoods. And so it's not a surprising result, but it validates that including social neighborhood risk into our models did make a difference and improved model performance overall, and we saw a clear spatial pattern there. So I'd like to acknowledge CMS and the Bristol-Myers Squibb Foundation, and also Rebecca Anthopoulos, our statistician, who did a lot of this work for us, and I'll take any questions.